you know, all the America doesn't have a monopoly on goofy politics stuff. Canada's got some stuff too. Do you want to talk about it, Lisa?
I think we should.
We probably should. We don't really want to.
It's part of the job.
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Hi there. Welcome to Politics is Broken. Don't talk over my line,
Lisa.
Sorry. Hi there. Welcome to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa. Hello, everybody.
How's everybody doing? How are you doing, Lisa?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Do you listen to that new Springsteen tune, Streets of Minneapolis?
No.
You haven't listened to it
yet? Not yet. No. It's on my list. I have a very exhaustive list that I have to get through.
Are you one of those people that has a list of everything you should consume in your phone?
No, on paper. I'm a paper girl. So I have like notes everywhere.
So someone's like, hey, you should watch this show. You're like, I'll add it to the list.
I do that with you.
Really?
Yes. I write it down. And then I don't find it for months. it's down.
That's evident in our conversations.
Fair.
Yeah, it is. I'm not a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, but he released a song called Streets of Minneapolis. And I think it's currently number one in the U.S. I'm not a big Springsteen fan, but it is like classic The River, late 70s Springsteen. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We feel it. Okay.
And he goes for the throat as well. Like, he is naming names and taking people down. And it's a solid tune.
To a good beat.
Oh, yeah. And that's exactly it.
Yeah.
I was worried when I started off. I was like, oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to be interested in like another acoustic, you know, one guy on a guitar telling the truth. When there's lots of people who do that really well, you know, in the style of like Woody Guthrie and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name on TikTok? Jesse Wells. Is that his name? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, probably. I'm not good with names. There's so many.
Okay,
so
it's fine. It's an American dude, and he's a very talented guy. He's very Woody Guthrie. But I was like, I don't really need that. Then the drums kick in, the organ, the piano, the guitars, electric guitars. Oof.
All right.
That's good.
Okay,
solid.
Let's wrap this up soon so I can go.
Okay, sounds good. Listen, but we're going to talk about the Conservative Party, who had their convention, leadership convention in Calgary just recently. And we paid attention to it, so you don't have to.
We watched it. Yay.
So the short story is, of course, that he garnered he, meaning Pierre Poilievre, he had to win the leadership convention. He had to be chosen again as leader. Win, I guess, isn't really that word, because there's no contenders. But he had to be chosen as leader again. And he got 87.4% support, which is higher than Stephen Harper's 2005 review of 84.5%. So I don't think it really surprised. It didn't surprise me. Did it surprise you at all?
No, because it's his base at the convention.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, you say there's no contenders, but I know there's some in the wings going, just biding my time.
Okay. Is it you?
Yeah, it's me. I'm just vying for the leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada. Can you imagine?
That'd be a shakeup.
Yeah, no. I don't think they'll let me into any of those functions.
Maybe not. Exactly. But what's interesting is that he got this support, and we've made light of the fact that you know, he's was it three elections that he lost at the helm of the Conservatives, and he didn't seem to understand. He didn't seem to feel like he had to change his ways really at all, or change his style or his delivery that much. In light of those defeats, and I thought to myself, you and I made light of the fact, it's like, why would they keep going with this guy? What's the deal? But I mean, it seems to me that it's you know, there's one of the delegates referred to him as a Robert Stanfield type of character, in that he was a guy who was a leader of the Conservatives, but never became prime minister. He's very popular in the base, but never became prime minister. And it kind of has that feel to me. It's kind of like, they sort of feel like he's their best shot still. And I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I don't know if it... I mean, watching it was just nauseating. But I don't even know at this point if they feel that he's their best shot, or if there's the leeriness of showing weakness as a party by not supporting him, right? Because then where does that lead them? It's sort of a...
rudderless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so... do you stick with what you know to show this unity and this, you know, like we're going to get it next time, boys. I don't know.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, if we look at the numbers, because I've sent you an abundance of show notes, and I apologize for that.
I haven't looked at any of them.
Well, that makes sense.
I did. I scrolled a little bit.
Explains quite a bit about this whole show.
It was 95% that I remember seeing in your notes. 95% of the delegates voted.
Looking right at it. 2,558 votes were cast, representing a 95% turnout, as you said, of the delegates in Calgary. Now, interestingly, under Polyev, the Conservative Fund Canada has doubled its fundraising, with the party using its House of Commons clips as content to drive donations.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 2025 election loss to Carney, Polyev's team highlighted 41.3% popular vote share, which is a party record, and 20 plus seat gains. Now, of course, he lost two from walk across the aisle. But how do we feel about that?
So this is the thing that because, you know, I look at it from all lenses when I'm listening to when they're talking or speaking their facts, I guess we'll say.
Yeah.
But I find it ironic, you know, it's all this, oh, we got, and oh, we did, and oh, look at what we have accomplished. You still didn't win.
You
didn't win twice, really.
Yeah.
But they talk about like these more votes and more seats and all these other kinds of things than ever before, highest numbers in the party's history. Why is that? We have more people in Canada, a lot of whom they want to get rid of. And so that also plays into numbers, right? Like, I don't know that you, like, if you're going by percentages, okay, fine. If you're going by, like, base numbers, the country has changed. So you can't really use that because, again, at the end of the day, you didn't win.
Yeah, I don't understand it necessarily. I mean, I understand the argument that it's a show of unity, a show of confidence. I think that's completely understandable.
Mm-hmm.
In light of the two MPs that crossed the floor, in light of the fact that they lost, I don't know why they haven't found somebody better. Like, did they go through Aaron O'Toole, Andrew Scheer, and go, oh, I guess Polyev did. It's going to be as good as it gets, I guess.
It's just so curious to me. Like, it's just so curious to me. Especially like when you talk about Scheer. I mean, like, Scheer, you lost again, but you are right there with the rah-rah-rahs. And, you know, maybe it leads to their whole Canada over party garbage that they talked about. But I don't know that they have anybody that is ready for that role right now.
Right.
I mean, Lanceman's close. But I think Giovanni's just chomping it. I think that's his wet dream. At some point it's Giovanni and Vance, right? Like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
What was interesting about, one more question actually about the support that they have and stuff, and the fact that he got 87.4% support.
Mm-hmm.
The question was, like, did any dissenters leave the party? Do you think that like Doug Ford having his provincial convention this weekend as well, do you think that that had an impact in the support? Do you think if those people were able to go to Calgary, there'd be less support for Polyev? I think that sounded like that was Doug Ford's kind of plan.
It's hard to say because, I mean, you know, the fact that you have to travel to this convention, I don't know how reasonable it is for a lot of people, especially after 10 years of Trudeau, how people and... going to food banks, I don't know how you afford to go to Calgary and stay in nice hotels for 3 days.
Sure.
Obviously, being in Calgary, you are centralizing the people that are going. I'm sure, like, I know there were people from all across Canada that attended, but you're going to have predominantly, I think, Western, Middle Canada attending this.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is a large part of his base, right? And so... I mean, if you watched last night's events, when they would pan the audience, it was very beige, right? And so, but that represents, I guess, the diehards that are going to a CPC convention.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess there's a little bit of, I've said before as well, I wish there were more conservative, reasonable choices. Because I don't like the idea of having, I mean, I appreciate everything that Carney's doing. I think he's doing a really good job of doing the balancing act of being stern and very, very fiercely pro-Canada, very, very pragmatic about that as well. It's not just sort of sunny ways. It's kind of like, listen, this sucks. This isn't exactly what we want, but this is what we have to do. This is the medicine we have to take. And right down to doing the press thing for the Canadian Media Fund with Heated Rivalry guy. And even just having his picture taken with a Heated Rivalry guy with his leg up on him. It's like, Polyev's not doing that.
No.
Absolutely not doing that. And I thought, well, this is fun. Sure. Okay. I mean, do I think Heated Rivalry is great? To be honest, I think it's a little gay.
I like a little gay.
It's fine, but I'm also thinking to myself, well, okay, I don't know if I would, but it's a huge success. That's all that matters. It's a huge success. And Carney seems to be there to celebrate that and to celebrate that aspect, even though it's not necessarily playing into his hard-nosed, pragmatic business guy image or whatever. So that's great. That's awesome. I can't see Polyev doing that. I thought that one of the interesting things about Polyev's speech was the fact that, in contrast to Carney's Davos speech, which was, nostalgia is not a strategy, which was very much, even though it was negative, a negative implication, it was very much forward-looking. It was very much things have to change, we're changing things. Not even things have to change, we're changing things, which felt darkly hopeful, if you know what I mean. Didn't feel like things are going to be great. It was like, listen, things are not awesome. We have to change to make sure they get back to somewhere close to awesome. In contrast to Polyev's speech, which was very much the Canadian promise, a hearkening to the past. Remember how good things were in the past? We want to get back to that. I don't.
I, you know, what the reality is, like, Carney's dealing with what is happening currently, right? And making decisions for Canada that have to happen for our best interests, for national security, for, our economy, everything like that. And so, I mean, I don't know that we can compare the Davos speech to, I mean,
A different type of speech as well.
no, I know, but like Carney's, like that was telling the world as well as telling Canadians, really, this is what we're going to be doing moving forward. This is the stance that we are taking. And I think for many Canadians, liberal, conservative, in the middle, it doesn't matter. I think that gave a little bit of hope of like, okay, we're finally recognizing we're not dancing around it anymore. Like we're recognizing that we need to do things. But because Pierre's speech is obviously dedicated to the people at convention who are card-carrying CPC members, he gets to play that kind of. I'm surprised they didn't have, old time music in the background. Remember when your grandparents, owned a house at 12? And yeah, like, wouldn't that be great? Except the world is not the same place anymore, right? Like, nothing is the same as it was 20 years ago, much less 50 years ago. And my worry is that within his speech, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, it's a lot of platitudes. It's a lot of, we're going to do this and people are going to be able to buy homes. How? Right?
Yeah, it does seem a little disconnected from the current reality. It reminds me of when Polyev said, well, I would just make a deal with Trump. It's like, yeah, duh.
Oh, you'll make a deal. Oh, why
Yeah.
didn't anyone
Oh
think
my
of
God.
that?
That's out of the box thinking.
Ask Venezuela about a deal.
Yeah, it just seems like it's very detached from what's actually happening. And I know that some people didn't necessarily like Carney's speech, Davos speech, but at the same time, like I said, it was darkly hopeful. It was saying, this is not a good situation. We're going to try to figure out we're figuring out ways to get out of this situation. And as opposed to Polyev's, again, doing the much more like, remember how good things were, as you said. Is that what it's going to come down to? Is that what we're going to be reverting to? I mean, it would seem to me, and I've overestimated the intelligence of the masses before. Rarely, but I have. It would seem to me that disproving that things were better in the past is an easier task than let's do things this way to make things better in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe it's just down to emotion, though. Maybe that's the key. Maybe.
But this is where Pierre is really great. He's great at pulling on emotion. And in the last, 5 years of Pierre,
yeah,
I'm gonna turn it around on him.
Yeah,
he elicited anger. He elicited anger mostly at Trudeau, and he was really great at that. He's great at harnessing that feeling from the people whose trailers he's coming out of. But I think now what he is trying to do, and you could kind of see it in his speech, like he's trying to be a little bit more relatable, right? He's trying to mm-hmm. be the little jokey guy, right?
Yeah.
But it's really easy to like grab on to the things that people, the story, the tales of the past. It's really easy to grab onto that and say those were the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, they weren't the good old days because they were dealing with things in that moment, right?
Sure.
That like we're not looking into. 20 years ago, would we have thought that there would have been a worldwide pandemic that would have impacted the globe, right, mm-hmm. in a variety of ways? Now we're dealing with, the stuff that's happening from the U.S., who have been our partners in crime, basically, mm-hmm. For decades, right? You can't predict some of this stuff, and so you can't rely on the past to fix the future. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a false bill of sale. I think he's just trying to, he's doing his used car salesman thing. He's just kind of changing his tone.
There was a moment, you and I watched the speech, not together. No. We watched it separated mm-hmm. by miles and miles and kilometers of distance. But we both felt it same.
But in spirit.
But in spirit, we were side by side.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things about the speech. One is you're right with the new, one of the things that should be noted is he has a new, he's obviously been told, soften your image a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Smile more. And it is a bit of a treat to see him smile because I think he's worked hard at it.
A lot of mirror practicing.
And to be fair, I will be fair here. I think that there's a very different, like there's smiling in real life and just like, mm-hmm. Generally being happy. That doesn't necessarily translate. I know that sometimes like even, I'm getting like headshots taken or something like that. I'll a photographer would be like, well, you can smile. And I'd be like, I am smiling. She's like, why is there a huge frown on your face? It's just when my face goes.
Airbrush that shit out.
Exactly. Just Grinch my mouth. So to his credit, it's not as easy as it sounds necessarily, but it is really fun to watch him try to intentionally go through his speech and smile.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like, it seems to me like transparent marketing, which is every politician's done that.
Yes.
Every politician's done that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what party. Right down to I watched an interview with Scott Bessent, some dork from the U.S. And I think that's his official title.
Mm-hmm.
And he is...
Official dork of the U.S.
Yeah. He is, first of all, a Will Ferrell character. And secondly... He said something that was so joyous to watch when he got asked some tough question in one of these Sunday political shows. And he took a pause, remembered his training, and said, America is the hottest country in the world right now. I was like, this guy has never called anything the hottest anything before in his life.
It's terrifying.
He's never said the word hot before. Yeah. It's a little too sexual for him.
Right? It's uncomfortable.
It's very uncomfortable. But he is going to say it because he's been trained to say it. So it was a little bit like that.
Yeah.
But let's talk some more about Polyev's speech in general, because one of the things that struck me about his speech was you're aware of the fact that he's trying to soften his image and that he's trying to, bring his people together anyway. Mm. I think he in his mind, perhaps trying to bring Canada together, maybe. But I did find him a bit rusty, and public speaking is no easy task,
mm-hmm.
but he was a bit stammery. And I thought, this isn't the same guy from not that long ago. I think maybe obviously had a lot riding on the speech, so maybe there was like a hint of fret there.
Nervousness, maybe. Yeah. I think anytime you are asked to do something that is out of your comfort zone or not who you truly are, you're going to stammer, right? Because you're trying to, you're reading the words, but in your mind you're trying, okay, I need to do this and I need to smile and here's my cue. And so it may not flow as naturally as your aggression that you're used to projecting, guess, right? I think probably there was some nerves. Yeah, I think there's a lot riding on it.
Sure.
Pierre is not, I hate saying it, like Pierre is not a bad speaker. He is. No.
He's charismatic in a way.
He is,
for sure.
He is, right? And, you know, again, with the jokes and the things that he said. But he generally is the person going on the attack, right?
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes trying to soften can be difficult because he's so used to like the jabs and the, you know, making fun of or things like that. So, but you could tell like he would have his, you know, thing that he was talking about and then he would soften his voice to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and use the examples that he was, you know, using in his speech to elicit emotion. And I found this speech wasn't so much about the anger portion of it. It was just more about the emotion. And I think whether that's intentional or not, I think the feeling of a lot of conservatives and really Canadians in general, because I think it goes across party line. The anger phase that we are in, I think, is leaving. And I think the worry phase is on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
And those are different emotions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you have to sort of, I hate using the word pivot, because that's what a lot of commentators have said about, you know, is Pierre going to pivot? But you have to. You have to be able to react to the emotions and feelings and concerns of the people that you're trying to reach. So before they was mad at Trudeau. Now it's, I don't even know if it's mad at Carney. I think it's just like there's this uncertainty happening.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be a clear villain as well. You're right. No. But I think what's interesting is a point you bring up is the fact that in an attempt to soften his image, to make him seem more approachable and more happy in general, you're right. He's been one of his super skills has been being an attack dog for sure. Mm-hmm. But you're asking someone who's like, you know, world-class boxer to go into a ring and to be convincing as vulnerable, to be convincing as, you know, softened or more friendly, you have to seem more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And that means taking the gloves away from your face and exposing your head, basically. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's, well, I do think that's what maybe some of the visual discomfort comes from, the stammering, the pained look when he smiles. He's an interesting guy. Let's just talk about I got some quotes from his speech. Okay. We can talk about these quotes. He had some jokes, which were, you know, well, you'll hear some of those as we go through.
They were Connie jokes. Yeah.
There we are. The new party name. If I were starting a new political party from scratch, it would be called the Mind Your Own Damn Business Party.
Which, again, is someone looking at it from, like, a different lens, then mind your own dev business and stay out of the way of trans rights and stay out of the way. You know what I mean? So take your own advice there, Pierre.
That's what my thought was. That joke is like that lands really well, because I think that people who receive that joke well, the majority of them that joke is intended for, will think, just mind your own damn business. And they're referring to parental rights, air quoting that. All that kind of stuff, as opposed to, well, exactly as you said, like trans rights, LGBTQ, reproductive rights, all that kind of stuff, where it's like, mind your own damn business. So if that were true. On liberal logic, he said, the liberals want to protect turkeys from hunters. We want to protect Canadians from criminals.
Yeah, I don't know that that's what the liberals are trying to do. I think they're trying to protect Canadians from assault rifles, but you know,
An armed dystopia,
right? Yeah.
on, this is interesting. This I thought was a pretty good joke. It's a Reagan reference where he said, if a liberal sees something that moves, he taxes it. If it keeps moving, he regulates it. And when it stops moving, he subsidizes it. I thought that's the kind of joke that your grandpa or your uncle would make.
Mm-hmm. It's the reference, right? From
It's a solid conservative joke.
It is, yeah.
On Mark Carney's status, he said, Mr. Carney is a big shot elsewhere, but a small player at home. And I thought, what's that based on?
His feeling. Right? Like, I don't get that.
That doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, but it gets a rise in the crowd, right? Like, I think a lot of the stuff that was said didn't make sense, but again, it was purposeful.
Yeah, delivered in a way, in an emotional way that gets mm-hmm. everyone riled up. But I think that's really funny that Mr. Carney's a big shot elsewhere. That's an admission. Because one of their big things about Trudeau is the fact that he was making Canada a laughingstock, they said, mm-hmm. and people weren't taking Canada seriously. Well, now we've got a prime minister who apparently is a big shot elsewhere.
Yeah.
I
don't know how that's an insult. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't, yeah, but I'm not a conservative, so there you go.
Speaking of pivots, another quote here. First, they said conservatives have no policies, just slogans. Then they said conservative policies are very scary. And then they said, we agree with all the conservative policies. I thought that's a fair dig. Not all the policies.
I was going to say, I don't think all the policies.
But there's been a lot of stuff.
But I think there also has to be a recognition that what they are referring to is the Trudeau liberal era. We are now in a Carney liberal era, which mm-hmm. is a soft conservative liberal era. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
It stands to reason that perhaps the themes of some policies are going to be joined, but the details of policy, the implementation of policy, those kinds of things are still going to be different.
Yeah.
I'll give an example. So we talk please. About the pipeline, okay, because mm-hmm. that was mentioned by both Danielle Smith and Pierre. So they are working with the federal government on this pipeline because the pipeline is going to help bring in resources and all this kind of stuff. The Trudeau liberals, although I don't know that they were anti-pipeline, I just think that they had other concerns that they were looking at in relation to pipeline, right? But that's the past, right? And now we have a different leader who is going to be looking at ways that we, because of the situation we're dealing with in the U.S., diversify resources, diversify economy, things like
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah.
We have to separate the two liberal eras, I think. And I think a lot of what he was discussing in his speech, you could tell, is based on the previous era, not the latter.
Yeah, yeah. Still very fixated mm-hmm. on the Trudeau era.
Well, why wouldn't you be? Huh?
Calm down. some good regional jokes I thought were pretty good. He said, welcome to my hometown. Who's excited to be in Calgary in January? We're tough. We can take it. Not really a joke, but just, nudge and a wink.
Yeah.
Two is the Atlantic delegates. Try the steak, not the seafood. That was a good self-deprecating joke.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. People from the prairies, he said, for those of you from the Eastern Prairies, sorry to block your view with the mountains. It's all right. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. To our friends in Toronto, enjoy your time outside the center of the universe. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. I live close to Toronto. I'm not from Toronto.
No, I don't.
Are you from Toronto? I'm not from Toronto. Get out of here.
Everyone in... Try and latch on to Toronto. T-dot.
Regarding the Emergencies Act, he said, I love seeing so many conservatives in one place, but it must freak the liberals out enough to invoke the Emergencies Act. Which is a dangerous joke, I think, because mm-hmm. he is equating the convoy protest, as it were, or occupation, to the conservative party. He's basically saying, that's us.
Right?
Them's us.
Them's our people. I liked it.
I mean, that kind of speaks to why the conservatives are apparently not doing very well with the 55-plus crowd, mm-hmm. Which we can talk more about those numbers in a minute. But I thought that was a dangerous joke because it's... walking a line.
Okay.
Doesn't paint them in the best light. In the past, he says, quote, in the past, you'd look out at the crowd and it would be the Great White North, white hair everywhere, which is pretty funny. I like that.
It was good. But again, you have, yeah, yeah. I'm sure there were some white haired people going, what? You talking about us?
Some other interesting quotes. These aren't from the speech. These are just from other folks, from Delegate Virender Sidhu, calling him, quote, the Robert Stanfield of today, as we mentioned. Popular in the party, but never got to become prime minister. Delegate Charlie Martin asked when he was asked if Polyev could win a rematch against Carney's anti-Trump campaign, and answering, he probably won't. No, and that's sad. Which is a weird take to get 87% of the support and go, he's not going to win. It's either the problems of the party or the problems of the leader.
I think it's both. But when you're looking at the concentration within that room, what else are you going to do? Right? Like you hope that your party is going to be successful in a federal election.
Yeah.
But like for right now, they have to decide whether they're going to keep the guy. And they by a large majority decided to keep the guy. Which
don't
makes
understand
it so much fun for us.
I know, it really does. Because you and I talked about this before the convention happened, and we said, I kind of want him to win. Because I feel that if he wins, it's the best chance of him not getting in the office.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really have a huge problem with a conservative government, necessarily.
No.
I don't agree with a lot of policies, but I don't have a huge problem with the conservative government. The current incarnation of the conservative government, I have a problem with because they feel a little bit too goofy to me.
Well, and I think that's how Carney won, is that you had a lot of middle of the road conservatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who were like, ew, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm blue, but ew. And that's, I think, part of the problem, right? Now, because when we're looking back to the last election and his campaigning for 3 years, it was very focused on a lot of specific things. And again, the world has changed, as it is prone to do. So we would have to see in the next run for federal, we'll see what his political stances are.
Mm-hmm.
It's who, again, if I was sitting in that room and I had to cast a vote, I think I would just go with the devil you know. And I think a lot of times people do just go with the devil you know, because at least you know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the absence of any genuine actual contenders, I think you're right. I think it's a case of we'll just go with this guy for now.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't say good things about the Conservative Party. To me, it says they're stagnating. To me, it says that they're trying to make, they keep trying to make fetch happen. It's just not going to go. It's like, guys, you're flogging a dead horse, which I don't understand. I don't understand why there hasn't been more movement.
But don't they feel like a party of the past because they kept referencing Harper?
Mm.
They kept like Reagan? I mean, Jesus Christ, we're going back.
We watched an episode of 30 Rock last night, which is one of my favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the episode where Jack Donaghy, Alec Baldwin's character,
mm-hmm.
is spending a day Reaganing, just solving problems. And it was just, he turns to Tina Fey at one point in her character, Liz Lemon, and he says she's having issues in a relationship. He's like, you're not going to tell your problems to the Gipper, mommy. That's what it kind of feels like.
Oh,
feels a little
God.
Like that. Of course, mm-hmm. he doesn't succeed. He does succeed in the very end. So there you go. Maybe it will all work out in the end.
Yeah.
But it wasn't all exactly. It wasn't all terrible jokes. There was one little celebration, of course. Polyev celebrating that the conservatives won a high school mock election. Congratulations,
yay.
Parents. The kids are all right.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I generally believe the kids are all right. Well, that brings us to just some interesting numbers, which I think are fascinating to me. There's a huge age gap in support for the conservatives, which is fascinating. Polyev leads plus 12 for the youth. So I take that sort of, you know, younger folk, whatever mm-hmm. that denomination is. And then seniors, 55 plus, don't like them.
Well, I think seniors 50 is 55 senior.
Seniors, I say 50, no.
No,
I'm a
right?
Child still.
I think, you know, people 55 plus have lived, have seen, have some intuition, go yeah. with their gut.
Yeah.
And they probably know there's something awry, we'll say, with this dude. Right?
Well, yeah, I think that's my take, as well as the fact is the idea that the older voters have said, looked at this guy and said, well, I'll get a good, this doesn't pass the smell test. Something mm-hmm. weird about this. Something's odd.
Well, they've lived through different iterations of government, right? So they've seen what conservative governments have done. They've seen what liberal governments have done. And if they're weighing the pros and cons of both, and they don't like them.
Is it just inexperience? Is it just lack of life experience that do you think that makes the... Because when I look at the conservative party, as I said, I don't have a, as we said, we don't have a problem with the conservatives getting into power in general, or forming a government, meaning generally, I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah.
But the current conservatives, to me, I don't think you guys are bright enough to do a great job. And I haven't seen the things that have happened over the course of the past 5 or so years. I think look at those things and I think to myself, I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced it's going to be good. And that's just from me thinking back to, well, I remember when Mulroney was in power and that he was okay, but I didn't like a lot of stuff he did. He did this wrong as far as I was concerned. Mm-hmm. When Harper was in power, I didn't like the fact that he banned the media. I didn't like the fact that he shut down science research and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that. I don't really want to go back to that. Mm-hmm. And if you guys are hearkening back.
Harpering
back to how great things that were under Harper, I don't think so. Yeah. Whereas if you're young enough, you don't remember those times. You're like, no. Yeah, maybe he's right.
And this is why they are latching on to the youth. This is why he's so happy about the mock elections in high school. It's why Giovanni's doing that whole Restore the North tour.
Yeah.
Trying to indoctrinate, I'll use their term, trying to indoctrinate youth, right? And why he is speaking to them about how great the past was. And how you'll never get that. You're never going to have a house. You're going to live in the street. You're going to go to the food bank. Mm-hmm. I can change that for you. And so youth are like, yeah, this sounds fantastic. But again, the hows just aren't howing for me of how you're going to make this happen, right? Like the housing. Oh, we have all the earth to grow the food, build the homes, get the resources. Okay. How, right? Because you still have, it doesn't matter if you get rid of consultants, it doesn't matter if you get rid of taxes and all those kinds of things. Housing is a free market initiative, mm-hmm. unless you are talking about the federal government overseeing housing, right? Like mm-hmm. building subsidized housing, providing housing for people. That's a little socialist. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. you can't have it both ways. Because the free market is establishing the prices. Yeah, taxes come into play. Yeah, the different red tape steps they have to take come into play. But at the end of the day, builders want to make money. Real estate agents want to make money. Insurance companies want to make money. And they're doing that based on the value of a home. So it stands to reason that if homes, mid-range homes are $600,000+, a 20-something coming out of university with a Bachelor of Arts degree... is not going to be able to, hey, we all have one, is not going to be able to buy a $600,000 home.
Yeah, yeah. But there's still some mental gymnastics there that bother me. Like, how do you go from that to thinking some guy saying, listen, I'll make it happen? I mean, maybe that's all it takes. Maybe that's all it takes.
But that's saying, the hope when they keep talking about hope, right? Yeah. He is giving them hope. As a used car salesman tells you, check out the air conditioning, but don't look under the hood. Like, it's the mm-hmm. same thing, right? Like, we'll mm-hmm. promise you, like, the shiny paint and stuff, but you got to look under the hood. And that's my worry, is I don't want the youth, because it's being replicated here, just like the things that are happening in the U.S., right? It's all these false promises of things. I don't want the youth to fall for something because they don't know. And I'm not saying the youth are not educated or smart enough to make decisions, but you know, when you are facing, you know, student loans and, you know, can't you, whatever, get a general bachelor's degree and you're working at Starbucks and you can't ever foresee yourself having what your parents had or what your grandparents had. You want somebody to tell you, come with me, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
We're going to make it like, you know, the glory days of the past. And it's like, but the how still isn't there.
So is it going to be a case of, for the younger voters who are supporting this more right-leaning ideology, and as you said, Jamil Giovanni doing his, what's it called again?
Restore the North.
Restore the North.
His campus trap. Great question, right? I don't know. Restoring it.
We're taking it back to when, I don't know, my family wouldn't be allowed to come here.
Right? Where we wouldn't be allowed to go into a restaurant? Like, what are you trying to take it back to?
Where are we aiming for? The Middle Ages?
Yeah.
And are we just literally waiting for that ideology to take control and then spin out like everybody who had seen this show before knows it's going to spin out, much like what's happening in the U.S.? Meaning, I think the same rhetoric worked on people in the U.S. for Trump getting in a second time. Listen, things are rough. Mm-hmm. I'm offering you hope, and that things are going to be so great with me. Things are going to be amazing. And anyone who had been there on the block more than once realized, no, this is a joke. This is empty, false promises. This is a scam. And now, I don't know what the numbers are. I would like to know what the numbers are as far as young voters in the U.S. now who had previously voted for Trump and stuff. Would they be looking at Minnesota now and looking at various other places and go, oh, this is a bit shit. Why are we doing this?
That's a tough gamble because it's really hard to say, right?
I think you look at like things like the Turning Point movement and stuff with Charlie Kirk's former thing and then his widow running it now. I think it's lost a little steam.
I think those kinds of things eventually do, right? Like, I think they hit a cycle and like they peak and then they drop off. That's what grifters do. Yeah. But I think the sentiment is not unwarranted, I think, for a lot of youth of like, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the people who actually voted for the blob may still be hanging on to that hope. Because for a lot of them, hope is all you have, right? And so if someone keeps telling you it's going to get better, you just be 6 more months, it's going to get better. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to hold on to hope. They're going to be disappointed and it's going to be too late. And then they'll realize that they were sold the false bill. It's just, again, it's a lot of stuff. One of the things that really bothered me when he was giving his speech is it's this hypocrisy. It's like, you know, we're going to allow for, you know, provincial authority and we're going to allow for this and that, but we're also going to drill a pipeline through your province because you can't say shit about it. Like, it's very much that. And if you're not really paying attention to the things that are going on, again, you're just taking the speech at face value. He talks about the separatism thing, although he didn't. And it's like, under conservative governments, there's never been separatism. But there actually has, okay?
Yeah.
But people don't know that, right? And so the youth weren't around in 1960 or 1980 or 1995. Like, you know what I mean? It's that kind of stuff that you have to do research. You have to know history. You have to kind of critically think about what's being said to you to see, is this actually true? Or does it just sound great in the moment? And we're getting applause and rah-rah-rahs, right? Mm-hmm. And that's worrisome to me because, again, I know not all voters are doing the research before they cast their ballot. I know not all voters are paying attention to the news or know history. And if I was somebody that had questions or was like, you know, it's uncertain in Alberta, I just don't know what to do. It's, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. And you have somebody telling you with a smile that, you know, conservatives have never had to deal with this because people are happy when conservatives are in power. That's swaying. Right?
Yes. It's swaying. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's all the argument you need. That's all the argument people have time to digest.
Yes, exactly.
And use as information to process. We'll finish off with some numbers. So now we'll summarize with saying the fact that it didn't surprise us.
No.
That he was shown a vote of confidence, because I think that's, as you said, that was the devil they know. That's mm-hmm. their only choice is to do that. The hard reality of numbers, of course, is that if an election were held today, the results would be tight enough to make any pollster sweat. Liberals would be at 41%. Conservatives would be 38-39%. Liberals are leading just by 2 or 3 points, which is a big shift, of course, from a year and a half ago when Conservatives and Poilievre had held a double-digit lead over Trudeau. However, Poilievre is his favorability not doing so great. Not doing awesome. Sitting at negative 13 to negative 22 nationally, roughly 35% favorable versus 58% unfavorable. Comparison, Carney's enjoying a Davos bump with a net favorability of plus 23, 53% favorable. Still, not mass. I mean, it's a lot, but I thought it might be higher than that.
Yeah.
And then, weirdly comforting, about 32% of Canadians say nothing could ever change their negative view of Poilievre.
Good. Fantastic.
I think my big takeaway from the Conservative Leadership Convention was the fact that it seemed to be detached from what was happening globally and Canada being a global player. Even though there was mention of building military bases in the Arctic and all that kind of stuff, that was kind of it. But that seemed to me like the kind of advice I would give after my second pint. What we should do?
What do we need?
There's more bases in Nunavut. That's what we need. And I just name all the territories I could think of. That's it.
While drunk.
While drunk, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is, I think it is it's a feasible idea, but at the same time, it just seemed like well, this is, because even though there's no real nuance to the current global political situation currently, but there is a delicate dance that's happening. Because you've got, it's like you're in a minivan with a drunk driver who's also insane and a criminal. And you're trying to reason with him because you have to reason with him. It's like that. Did you see that story recently about the person who woke up on a bus and the bus was going in a totally different direction than when they were supposed to be going?
No.
Okay. Recapping really shortly here, you can go find it yourself. On social media, this person had this thread on Blue Sky saying how they had woken up on this bus that was going somewhere. They'd bought a ticket to go wherever their destination was. They woke up and they realized, we're not going in the right direction. They're looking at street signs and traffic highway signs and stuff saying, well, this is obviously really wrong. And they also realized the bus driver had changed. It was a different bus driver. And the bus driver was not listening to anyone. He was screaming at passengers. He was being a little crazy. Got a little goofy. And anyway, it ended up that they finally got the person to pull the bus over and people just got out and the bus company gave everyone free trips and stuff like that. Could just sort of like keep it down to the down low. This is not really great. So I'll give sympathy. The poor driver may be going through something. Yeah. I don't know what he's going through, whatever.
Okay.
But that idea, the analogy being that, you know, it feels like the world has woken up in this bus with Donald Trump behind the wheel, and he's a little crazy, he's a little criminal, he's a little narcissistic, and sure, we could just all kind of yell at him, or someone could maybe sweet talk him a little bit. It might take a little bit of both. It might take a little bit of both of that. So I don't feel that a party led by someone who said, I would just make a deal with the U.S. government, is really one that seems mature enough to actually do the job.
I think it was I don't know that it was the venue for him to like really talk about Trump because,
no,
again, his base. But I don't like, what's the term he used? Diplomatic disruption. It's a little bit more than a diplomatic disruption. The fucking threat of annexation. Like, let's be real. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I think just to interject really quickly, even in light of the Alberta separatist movement, as we talked about in the previous episode, where it's like, my view is Alberta separates and they will be gobbled up and become Alberta Rico immediately. Yeah. Like it's, they will have no vote and they'll just, they're stripped for the resources.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I think there has to be more acknowledgement of the things that are happening. And, you know, the separatist thing in Alberta is not new. Like it's not just a Trudeau issue. It is a Trudeau issue, but from way back when, but even before that, right? Like, I mean, it has always been in the background, you know, percolating. Quebec is Quebec, right? Like,
sure.
But I think to just sort of sweep that under the rug of, you know, United Canada, no conservatives have ever had to deal with separatism. Like, it's just a lot of false narrative to sort of placate things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, if you vote us in, nobody's going to want to separate. Like, that's the messaging that I hear when he's saying that, which is garbage.
Baseless promise.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. It's garbage. But again, raw. The funny thing when I was watching, too, there was when they were like, you know, waving their signs when he would say something. There was one sign that said Battle River Crowfoot. I'm like,
oh, that's so sad.
Is that ironic? Or are you trying to make a statement? Or did you not read that he's not coming back to you? Like, I know
it's pretty funny.
I know. It was hilarious.
If it's a joke, it's very funny.
If it was intentional, like, kudos.
Yeah. If it wasn't, that's really sad.
I feel bad for you. Yeah.
I know. Oh, that's sad. Polyev seems like someone who's never really listened to the lyrics to that song that says, dance with the one that brung you. You know what I mean?
No, but can I just tell you, if I was Journey, I'd be really pissed off that they're playing Don't Stop Believin' at the end of the CPC convention.
I don't think it's even on the radar. I don't think that America is really even properly aware of the fact that the conservatives are who they are, that they're sort of a Republican leaning.
Don't you have to pay copyrights if you're using somebody's song?
Technically, the venue pays.
Okay.
So the venue pays a SOCAN fee to use music, and that music is...
Just general,
allowed to be used. However, songwriters can object.
Yes.
And masters company, like through the recording, people who own the recordings can also object and say you can't use that recording as well. But...
I'm guessing there was no permission asked. It's just something that
absolutely
will
not.
It's inconsequential. I just thought,
Yeah, someone plugged in an iPod Nano.
Right? Yeah.
Hit the button.
Up to the microphone.
Exactly. Anyone got an aux? Yeah. So anyway, we'll see what happens. It didn't surprise us, as we said. There wasn't really much choice for the conservatives. Again, I do feel there's a need for an actual opposition in Canada. And I don't think we have one currently. I think politically we're a bit leaderless at the moment, apart from Carney. And apart from, I'll even give Elizabeth May a shout out there because she is wacky. But
Auntie May.
She's doing her thing, you know what I mean, for the Green Party. But as far as like, there's no NDP, there's no, I mean, even, you know, like, I guess like the Bloc is possible contender, but they're not really a Canadian party. I feels like I wish there was more choice. And there isn't a lot of choice. But I'm happy with Carney for now.
Yeah, and I think the timing of the leadership review, it is what it is. It had to happen, right?
Yeah.
It would be different if, you know, it's different when a leader decides to step away, right? Then you have more competition, as we saw the last time, whether it was all on the up and up or not, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think for right now, they're going to stay the course and keep going with him until something changes, until either he decides he's done. I was going to say, or he becomes prime minister, but that's not happening.
God, don't even jinx us like that. I had to knock wood on that. No. I'm not going to make any predictions about that because I don't want to think about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, whatever happens, we'll talk about it. So thanks everyone for watching it or listening to Politics is Broken. We do appreciate the support and you following and subscribing and liking and all that kind of stuff. Last week's episode was our biggest episode yet, by the way.
Was it?
It was, yeah.
I don't remember what we talked about last week.
Who knows?
Right.
Of course, you can watch us in the Substack TV app, which is exciting. You can watch us on YouTube. And of course, you can listen on your favorite podcast platform, wherever you listen to podcasts. You know what I mean? So that's up to you. We're not going to tell you where to find us.
Where and when you need.
Where and when you need to listen to our dulcet tones. Tones also. Tones. We dealt the tones. Take care of yourselves. Thank you for, if you're a paid subscriber, thank you for doing that as well. You can, of course, watch the videos on Substack and Substack TV without any commercials or any restrictions and all that kind of stuff. But apart from that, take care of each other. Be nice to each other.
We'll catch you next week. I'm sure something will happen between now and then.
Probably, God. It's exhausting.
I know.
Take care, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out BrittleStar.com for more.